Good evening, my friends. Nice to sit with you tonight. It's going to get cold, as I understand, coming. It's okay. 'Tis the season. So we're practicing. And it's important to remind ourselves that this is a practice. And to even come close to the benefits of what the teachings offer, of course, we have to do it. And so a daily practice is really important, but it's not something to set up to add some more anxiety to your life, but just set the intention. And again, as Randy said, we're beginning to notice in a way that maybe we have not noticed before, being more mindful of the body and the sensations and feelings and emotions and thoughts. And you might say, well, I'm not having any emotions right now. Well, that's okay. Remember, practice is a bridge. It creates a bridge. So be patient with yourself, because you will remember this. The body has a lot of wisdom, and it's there. So it's important just to be with what is actually in any given moment. Now, to talk about the mind and thoughts, there's only one thing that I can read, and I know many of you've heard this before, but it's important to hear it again. It's the crazy mind. No one says it better. This is Bhattaji. He says, somewhere in this process, you will come face to face with the sudden and shocking realization that you are completely crazy. Your mind is a shrinking, gibbering madhouse on wheels, barreling pell-mell down the hill, utterly out of control and hopeless. No problem. You are not crazier than you were yesterday. It has always been this way, and you just have never noticed. You're also no crazier than everybody else around you. The only real difference is that you have confronted the situation and others have not. So isn't it a relief that it's been said by someone who knows that the mind is crazy? And so we begin to just see how crazy it is. And so that takes a lot of courage. So we begin to see what is our relationship with our mind. And the teachings say it's a great servant. It's not the villain. It has its purpose. It has its use. But it's a great servant, but an awful master. And so we come from a society who actually just about worships the rational mind, but knows very little about the true nature of the mind. So as we observe our thoughts and question our beliefs, we begin to understand that while thinking and planning and remembering, they're all vital to our lives, but we begin to see that they're more uncertain, unreliable, biased, fickle, flighty, erratic, insubstantial. Those are all the ones I could think of. Than what we believe, because that's not what we were taught. Our thoughts are always more temporary and one-sided than we've ever thought before. So, ordinarily, we were taught to believe them. But questioning our thoughts is at the heart of the Buddhist practice. So, so important. Because we begin to question what our thoughts are telling us, our minds, is what we believe is true? Is it certain? Is it solid? Is it something we can depend upon? And when we believe our own thoughts and opinions, we become fundamentalist. Why? Well, because that's what we're hanging out with. We're just hanging out with our own opinions and our own thoughts and what we've created around what the universe has given us. So, but no matter how strongly we believe in our perspective, as we well know, there's so many more perspectives. It's just one point of view. And it's only a point of view. And this is something that we begin to find out for ourselves. We rely on the mind in a whole different way when we begin to see its true nature. So Buddha said very well that we just go around annoying others with our opinions. Is that not true? And in our personal relationship, that it's really obvious because that's it. You know, that's where it happens. That's where we get in this sense of self or ego. And with this separateness, we think we know. And so with wisdom, we do eventually open up to the possibility that there are other perspectives. And that's okay because we understand the nature of perspective and we're not necessarily trying to do anything with them but know it, know what a perspective is. And most of our mental suffering comes from the mind. One teacher said, Anand Tupton, 99% of our suffering is self-made. Think about that. It comes from our tightly held beliefs that we have stuck in our minds. And along with a lot of thoughts that we keep bringing up or bringing to us, and perceptions. And then with these thoughts, what we begin to see, too, they have that nature of course, arising and falling away. But no, we want to add more thoughts and more thoughts. And then we get into creating our own reality. And so the suffering will come. So in the Buddhist training, our thoughts are deconstructed, the entire structure dismantled, just like our beliefs on our body, just like our beliefs that we carry around about the sensations and feelings and emotions. That's what we're beginning to see, experience for ourselves, the truth of all of it. And when we are bothered by our thinking, Buddhist psychology tells us, just ask the question, is it really true? And that inquiry is very powerful. And especially when it comes from an intention but you really want to know, is it really true? And if we begin to know how to listen from the heart, we'll see how much trouble comes from believing the stories. They may not even be true. And sure enough, when we investigate this, most of them aren't true. Because the nature of the mind, it makes things up. I see it in myself every day. When I see something and I draw a conclusion about something, I'll see a deer. And then all of a sudden I have this dialogue, inner dialogue about who that deer is and what that deer's doing and, you know, all kinds of things. And nothing's wrong with thinking consciously. But if we're stuck in our thoughts, where are we? Well, we're in our mind. And so what am I missing? Well, with the story about the deer, I'm missing the deer who's right there in the present moment. But no, let me have a dialogue about it. So Achan Cha, who is a famous Thai teacher, says, you have so many view and opinions, what's good and bad, right and wrong. You cling to your views and suffer so much. They are only views, you know. And so again, our relationship with our views begin to change too. What's the benefit of that? Well, we have to see that for ourselves. But the promise is there's a lot of freedom and happiness in that deep wisdom. And so with the stillness, and the stillness is so important. When we're meditating, stay still. Even if you have an itch, even if there's whatever's going on, I mean, you know, there's exceptions. But set an intention to stay still the whole 30 minutes. Because it's the stillness that enables us to continue the concentration that allows us to see the things that we cannot see otherwise when we're busy. And so our teachers used to say, don't move. And we said, oh, I got this itch, this mosquito's on me, don't move. And what happens is we begin to see how we react to everything. Not only with a dialogue, but, you know, we think we have to react to everything that comes to the body instead of just being with it. So we learn to observe how words and images arise and then they vanish. But see, the proof is seeing that for ourselves experientially. You're hearing it, and that's beautiful. Hearing the Dharma is beautiful. But it's truly the experience that's the truth, becomes the truth. So we build these mindful castles within us with these ideas and plans that float for a time and then they just disappear like bubbles in a drink. But we can become so silent with the stillness that we actually feel the subtle thought energy appear and vanish. That's possible. Now, don't set yourself up for that goal and think something's wrong if you can't see it. But Jack Kornfield says it's possible. But if thoughts are empty, what can we rely upon? Where's our refuge? do you kind of see what the word empty that we see in these teachings kind of mean? I mean, when I first heard empty, empty, happy, happy, or, you know, I didn't understand. What do you mean empty? I'm just full of it. But emptiness comes from understanding that there's nothing to do or be but in the present moment. Adding nothing. There's the happiness and the freedom. So, where do we rely? What do we rely on? Nisargadatta, an Indian sage, says, "The mind creates the abyss. The heart crosses it." So, with this stillness, with this practice, we do touch our deep wisdom because it's already there. The Buddha nature is there. Now, what's covering it up? And it arises and it falls away because we use techniques and ways of living that doesn't allow it to be. So the thinking mind constructs all kinds of views of right and wrong, good and bad, self and other. These are the abyss. When we let thoughts come and go without clinging, we can use thought, but we rest in the heart, the knowing of the thought. And it is that knowing, that recognizing, that frees us. That's the so simple part of this, is just recognizing what we were given. And we become more trusting and courageous. Because there's innocence in this wisdom of the heart. It's called a child spirit. Child of the spirit. So this innate wisdom is there. And resting in this wisdom of the heart, we live in harmony with our breath and body. And then ease of living happen. Ease of living. And then there, resting in our wisdom and relying on it, our patience grows. So we do not have to think about it all the time. We don't have to have a comment or a dialogue about everything as we're conditioned to do. Because life is unfolding around us. And if we get stuck in what we want to add to seeing or being with the person we love most, then what happens? Well, we can't be anywhere but in the present moment to be with anything or anyone. Otherwise, we're stuck in our thoughts, in our heads. So we begin to surrender to this truth, but not as a victim. Because again, you have within you, like all of us, a discriminating wisdom that will arise, especially if your intent, if you're on this journey to find out the truth. You get all kinds of support. Now, I can't verify that, but I can tell you that on the journey, if you're sincere, then yeah, there's lots of support. So I'm going to end with Suzuki Roshi. Thank you, Randy. In Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. He says, when you are practicing meditation, do not try to stop your thinking. Let it stop by itself. If something comes into your mind, let it come in. Let it go out. It will not stay long. When you try to stop your thinking, it means you're bothered by it. Do not be bothered by anything. It appears that the something comes from outside your mind, but actually it is only the waves of your mind. And if you're not bothered by the waves, gradually they will become calmer and calmer. Many sensations come, many thoughts or images arise, but they're just waves from your own mind. Nothing comes from outside your mind. If you leave your mind as it is, it will become calm. And he says that's called the big mind. So, Stephen, I know I'm running kind of late, I guess. Stephen, would you put up our visual and just give you a little check on things about what we want to remember, mindfulness of thoughts or mindful of thoughts. The most important thing is to know we are not our thoughts. And as Randy said earlier, thoughts are the thinker. We don't know from where they come and we don't know from where they go. And guess what? It doesn't matter. Because if you're not your thought and you have this unwholesome thought, then would you be bothered by it? No. But noting the thought, and the easiest way to really get into this is, like Randy said, naming. Anytime it comes up throughout the day or in your sitting, thinking. Oh, thinking. Again, we're just noticing. And then we're relaxing, we're observing, and we're allowing. Is that, seems like I had something else in there.
It won't work the screen.
Okay, well, I can't remember what it is, but there's other things. But those are just some things to remember.
There you go.
Add nothing to the thought. Or when you do add something to the thought, just know that you're adding something to the thought. And this one is a biggie. We don't need to analyze our thoughts, because if we understand their true nature, it's not going to help us to try to analyze a thought that we don't even know from where it comes. And it's not us. So with that, thank you, Stephen, for that, and I'll stop and open it up to you. We'll ask Randy to come over.